would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. My name is Linda Meeks. I'm your host for this morning, and my guest today is my colleague, Laura Bates, who is a registered nurse and an education facilitator with the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. Good morning, Laura.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we talk every morning, but today's for a different project.
It is. I'm excited.
So you'll be talking about a journal article. Can you describe that for us and which one you'll be speaking about?
Of course. The journal article that I chose to speak about today was written by Anita Mallon, Felicity Hassan, Karen Kasson, Paul Slater, and Sonia McIlfatrick, and is entitled Young Adults Understanding and Readiness to Engage with Palliative Care, Extending the Reach of Palliative Care Through a Public Health Approach, a Qualitative Study. This article was published in 2021 in the journal BMC Palliative Care. It comes from the UK. I feel very strongly, both personally and professionally, that it's very important to normalize discussions about dying, death, and palliative care. And this article caught my eye because I believe young adults are an untapped resource when it comes to our efforts in making conversations about difficult topics more normalized in our society.
Now, because we work together, I know you feel very strongly about normalizing discussions about death and dying, but can you tell us why you specifically chose this article?
So I had three main reasons for choosing this article. One was that it specifically looked at the understanding and engagement of young adults in terms of palliative care. I have a teenage son, and this sort of cohort of the population is of interest to me because I see how they can affect how we view specific things. It's a section of the general public that's not often studied in terms of hospice palliative care, and there's not very much published literature about this age group specifically. Most of what I could find out there focused on students who are already in healthcare fields, like nursing students or medical students, or it only looks at a specific area of palliative care, such as those for that being provided for a specific disease such as cancer. Another was that the study was conducted in the United Kingdom. Even though there are differences between the culture here in Canada and the UK, there are a lot of similarities, including the views of death and dying. And I believe that the findings of this study can be transferred to our population because of that. The third reason, as the study authors mention, young adults are a powerful cohort, and they have the ability to facilitate behavior change within the whole society. We think about trends in pop culture, especially, the biggest influence and source of change comes from young adults. And if we want to understand how to normalize conversations about death, dying, and hospice palliative care across all ages of the general public, I think we need to look at what young adults know and how to fill the gaps in their knowledge.
And what was the aim of this study?
The aim of the study was to explore the current level of understanding of palliative care held by young adults and to identify what influences that understanding. The authors wished to identify determinants that could inform public health approaches to promoting a greater level of public engagement within the United Kingdom when it comes to palliative care specifically.
And Laura, can you describe what model the authors used to frame their inquiry and study?
Yes, the authors chose to use the socio-ecological model and look at this in terms of a more sociological approach. In order to understand this model, you have to be aware of what the public health approach is first. So the public health system can be used to provide both structure and resources to allow integration of a specific topic, such as palliative care, into all health and social care systems and into civil society as a whole. However, in order for this to be successful, two assumptions must be made true. The first assumption is that the public has the sufficient knowledge to accept the topic as a priority issue that is relevant to their present life. And the second is that the public has sufficient understanding of how that topic or answer to that topic, such as palliative care, responds to this priority issue. The socio-ecological model looks at multiple societal levels of influence surrounding a designated population of people. Think about an onion with its center core and its surrounding layers. So in the center or core is the population of people. Surrounding that are the layers that influence the core and all of the other layers around them also. The layer of influences in this model, starting from the center and moving outwards, are interpersonal, which is your knowledge, your attitudes, your perceptions, and your beliefs. Then comes interpersonal, which is family, friends, and peers. Then community, such as social networks, informal groups, and social norms. Then come formal organizations, such as schools, churches, and the workplace. Then comes policy, both at local and national levels. Then comes physical space, which is the actual placement of services and their availability. And then the outer layer is culture, both ethnic and national. Each of these levels represent a potential target for the influence of public health interventions.
Wow, that was a great review. I think we took that socio-ecological model many years ago in school, but I can see how it is totally relevant to what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, it was a good review.
And how was the study completed?
First, there was an online survey completed, and those who expressed interest within the survey were contacted and offered an interview to participate in the study. 859 people completed this online survey. And from that, there was a number who indicated interest in an interview. And from those who expressed interest, the researchers ended up with 24 participants who actually scheduled and completed their interviews. The interviews were held in person, on the telephone, or on Skype, and it was up to the participant to choose the method of the interview.
I'm very interested to hear the results of the study. Could you share those with us?
Of course. The results were very interesting. Some were a bit surprising and some were not, given my own professional and personal experiences in hospice palliative care. First off, the researchers looked at what experience the participants had with palliative care prior to their interviews and the study. They found that although the majority of participants had heard of palliative care before, most had no direct experience with it. Some were even unsure if the care that relatives had received in the past was classified as palliative care or not. Any personal experience that they might have had was primarily with an older relative and usually in the context of a nursing home or a hospital. For those who were students in a healthcare program at the post-secondary institution, there was a bit more familiarity due to the course content or clinical placements that they had had. The results of the interview questions were broken down into three areas. First, they looked at intrapersonal and interpersonal influences. Then they looked at cultural and social influences. And then they looked at organizational and policy influences. For each of these, the author provides some quotes from the participants as examples for their findings. The researchers found that palliative care in itself is considered innocuous, but there's a culture of fear and discomfort in which it is positioned because it goes along with dying and death. This meant that social norms were used to social norms were used to dictate when, how, and where young adults were engaged with the subject of palliative care. Many of the participants perceived that they had a lack of skill, which made them fearful in engaging in deeper, more emotional conversations on these topics. Many expressed a sense of responsibility for causing upset in others if they spoke about palliative care. There were lots of negative words used by the participants around death, dying, and grief. Some of the words that were quoted in the paper include fearful, terrifying, and distressing, which are very negative. The interviews also brought to light the fact that there are socially acceptable times to talk about palliative care, death, dying, and grief, and that there are also unacceptable times to talk about these topics. This perpetuates the reluctance to discuss these topics in general, and also contributes to an awkwardness of how to communicate with those who are grieving, either for the loss of their own health or the loss of a person after death. Researchers also found that culture and society separated young adults from the conversations and decisions that were happening in their lives regarding palliative care, even if it involved a family member, and that this protective norm extends when the participants were asked about the idea of introducing palliative care to younger teens or even children, despite them expressing a belief that there was a benefit to normalizing the topic. In general, participants agreed that more open discussions and knowledge about palliative care, and therefore dying, death, grief, and bereavement, was beneficial to all, but acknowledged that there were many societal barriers preventing these open conversations. The barriers that were mentioned include the fear of saying the wrong thing, exacerbating an already difficult or emotional situation, or fear of highlighting what someone is no longer able to do. There was also a general lack of confidence in holding these types of difficult conversations. Interestingly, one of the participants identified themselves as having the role of a family caregiver and acknowledged that in their specific situation, there were different norms because discussions regarding illness and disability were uninhibited, began at an early age, and were open discussions. The knowledge that they were given was considered more protective and empowering than the sheltering of that young person. And I found that really insightful, that from somebody who had personal experience with illness and disability and facing dying and death, that they knew that having these open conversations was more important than hiding and shielding the young people of the family. For organizational and policy influences, participants thought that former organizations did have a potential role to promote more positive attitudes towards palliative care and normalizing this topic through a grassroots approach. One idea given was introducing the concepts earlier in life and providing support structures through the years to discuss all types of difficult topics, not just death and end-of-life care, in order to make the education system more reflective of these universal issues. They also felt that faith and religious organizations could be useful in doing this. One participant was quoted as saying that faith or religion could provide a degree of hope in a time that often seems hopeless to those involved. In terms of government and policy, participants felt that it was very important that this type of information be widely available and discussed, especially in areas where healthcare services are centralized and specific programs or services may not be available in the immediate physical area. Participants identified that interventions need to occur on multiple societal levels, and that many understood that if there was no individual knowledge on the subject, then the cultural and societal norms would guide them, just like in the socio-ecological model and what it states. One particularly insightful participant acknowledged that measures completed in the present or near future may have impacts on the greater society that are only able to be measured or visible in the more distant future. And I thought that was really insightful. Overall, even though this was the first study to explore in depth how young adults specifically perceive palliative care and what factors affect their understanding and engagement, it did confirm that they struggle with the same fears, misperceptions, and confusion that other studies have found when looking at patients, at caregivers, at healthcare professionals, and at the general public. Other studies, which have looked at interventions targeting teens, have shown positive results in this area. And this study shows that those types of interventions could also be applicable to young adults. I'm going to quote a portion of the paper as I felt the author summarized it up perfectly. The quote is, "Allowing young adults a say in determining and communicating policy that introduces palliative care into the education system can make its introduction seamless and responsive. This may lead to a normalization of palliative care with tangible improvements in understanding."
Was there any discussion in the paper about how information could be disseminated to young adults in this age bracket?
There was. And not surprising, the participants agreed that social media, YouTube, and print and visual advertisements, and even leaflets would be the best methods for getting information out to people of this particular age bracket. They all felt that information that could be consumed quickly and on the go was the best. They also felt that social media would be the best way to garner interest and follow up for special events involving ways to find out further information. Participants also stated that measures to encourage or teach people how to get these conversations started and where to find further information would be beneficial. A lot of them felt that if the seed was planted with a little tidbit of information, that it would encourage people to go off and find more information on their own. And again, social media, as we all know, is one of the best ways to disseminate information to the masses at this point.
What are some of the limitations of the study?
Firstly, the number of interviews held was relatively small, and repeating the interviews with a larger number of participants could be helpful to confirm whether the responses are actually representative of the larger population or not. In addition, participation was voluntary, which likely reduced the number of people, as only those willing to discuss palliative care would have answered that they were interested. Although of the 24 participants, 9 were male and 15 were female, the author go on to state that only one participant was non-Caucasian, which could have been a limit if the results would be significantly different between Caucasians and non-Caucasians when discussing palliative care. The authors also acknowledged that the fact that all participants came from the same university is a limitation because it limits the diversity in terms of socioeconomic background and level of education.
What did the authors consider the main takeaway message from their study?
The authors stated that despite dying, death, and palliative care being considered private issues, young adults have demonstrated a readiness to engage in these issues but are inhibited by a culture that has restricted who, how, what, where, and when that engagement should take place. The use of the socio-ecological model could provide a framework for a public health approach to increase that knowledge and comfort, not just for young adults, but for all of the general public with dying, death, and palliative care.
Well, it's been a very interesting study, as the focus of our role and the nurse consultants who work for the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network is to have the approach to increase the knowledge and comfort of all when discussing death, dying, and palliative care, as well as taking care of loved ones who are dying. So the study absolutely totally makes sense to us. And I mean, one of the presentations that we have, and perhaps we could have a link to it after we post the podcast, is having difficult discussions. So the network definitely has, you know, that education, as well as we do go to Georgian College to teach some of the students about palliative care. But as far as teenagers, that's obviously something that needs to be a possible target. And it's interesting about social media and how would one target teenagers with social media that they actually looked at it. We know that there's some famous sort of Instagram palliative care nurses, but I think it's mostly probably adults and fellow colleagues that follow their social media.
I would agree. I think that those who are on social media now are doing a great job of getting some of the information out there. But I think that older teen and young adult cohort is definitely untapped at this point. Maybe we have a future hobby on our hands, Linda.
Yes, I agree, Laura.
I think it's great that we are able as healthcare professionals to speak openly about these topics with all of the people that we come across, both personally and professionally. And I think that anybody listening needs to remember that it is important to speak about the more difficult topics with people of all ages, as long as we're doing it in an age and stage appropriate manner in order to make it less scary. The old saying is that we fear what we don't know, and knowledge is what makes things less scary and makes us better able to cope when that becomes personally relevant in the future.
I agree. Thanks, Laura, for your interesting conversation. And as mentioned before, I do know that this is a topic near and dear to your heart and also as well to the rest of the organization. Thanks again for joining me today.
You're very welcome, Linda. Thanks for having me on the podcast.